From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida's citrus is a $9 billion industry here in Florida, employing some 76,000 people. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture's estimate on this year's orange crop yield is 9% lower than the last growing season. That reduction is due in large part to the pervasive citrus disease greening. Ahead of Florida's Citrus Expo next week in North Fort Myers, we'll take a closer look at the status of the industry and challenges ahead. Plus, the State Department of Education's 2013 Florida Teacher of the Year was recently announced. Two of the top five nominees are instructors right here in Southwest Florida. We'll meet them and hear their insights into what makes for an effective educator. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. On today's program, what makes a Teacher of the Year? Two educators from Southwest Florida were among the top five finalists for this year's Florida Teacher of the Year, announced at a ceremony last month in Orlando. Dance teacher Patricia Gare of Cypress Lake High School Center for the Arts in Fort Myers and marine science teacher Katrin Rudge of Riverview High School in Sarasota were selected among some 189,000 teachers across the state. We'll meet them later in today's show. But first, next Wednesday and Thursday, the citrus industry holds its largest event of the year. The Lee County Civic Center in North Fort Myers is the venue for growers and people in related industries to gather and exchange information and learn about new products and technologies. Citrus is a $9 billion industry here in Florida, employing about 75 or 76,000 people. At the turn of the last century, many children were delighted to get an orange in their Christmas stocking. Many baby boomers grew up enjoying a glass of Florida orange juice as a staple in the morning. But now the luxury that became a commodity is under some pressure. Joining us in the studio is Ron Hamill, Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Gulf Citrus Growers Association. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks, John. Very glad to be here and discuss our industry with you and your guest and all your audience.
Excellent. Also with us is President of the Gulf Citrus Growers Association, Wayne Simmons. Wayne is also President of LaBelle Fruit Company and owns groves in Hendry, Collier, and Hillsborough counties. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we welcome your input as well. You can join our conversation. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And first, a little bit about the association and citrus agriculture in Southwest Florida. How many members do you have and how many acres are under cultivation?
John, I'll go ahead and handle that one. We currently have about 80 grower members in Gulf Citrus, and they range from large acreage growers down to 2-acre growers. So we have a wide diversity of members in our area. And currently, we grow about 130,000 acres of citrus here in Southwest Florida, which is actually down from a high of close to 200,000 acres several years ago.
And we'll discuss some of the reasons for that a little bit later. But how important is this region to the state's overall orange production?
Well, we're about 22 to 25% of the industry. So we say we're about a quarter of the Florida's total industry.
Oh, wow, quite
significant. And very significant. And we're a relatively newcomer to the industry, but very important part, an integral part of the industry here in Southwest Florida.
And is most of that product processed into orange juice?
Yes, we're about 96 to 97% oranges that ultimately end up in that great glass of Florida orange juice.
All right. And now on to the elephant in the room, which we've already sort of touched on, HLB or citrus greening. Florida's citrus crop declined by, I believe, about 9% last year, and that's attributed to HLB, an infection spread by a bug which infects and kills trees. Wayne, first of all, tell us a little bit about the disease itself and maybe how it may have impacted your groves.
Well, HLB is spread by a psyllid, a little insect that's about the size of a gnat. It takes the HLB, which is a virus, and the psyllid penetrates the tree and spreads the disease. The industry first experienced that in 2005, and since then it's been very devastating to our industry.
And what about, your groves, the ones that I had mentioned, around Hillsborough, Collier, Hendry counties? Are you seeing it there too?
Yes, it's pretty well widespread across the state, as well as into Georgia, Louisiana, into Texas, and they're fighting it in California as well. My personal groves have been impacted. I'm having to replace quite a few number of trees, and it's been devastating to my existing grove.
And so what do you do? Are pesticides effective?
We certainly have to spray more for the psyllids to keep them under control, but it's increased our production cost probably twice as much as in the past. And so we're spending twice as much money and impacting the bottom line and our profitability.
Well, I imagine there's also an issue with, the money that you have to spend in order to protect the trees. I was reading that some pesticides that had initially shown to be effective against preventing the psyllid now are not. They've developed a resistance.
Yes, and that's certainly a problem. We certainly have to be careful and recognize the fact that we can get resistance if we repeatedly use the same pesticide, and just be good stewards of what we have and try and use the complete arsenal to control these pests.
And as far as, developed existing, technology, what we know works out there, what about using things like more fertilizer, making trees more stronger to resist the infection? Is that effective?
Increasing the fertilizer is probably not, but we certainly have to give them nutritional trace elements, minerals and other metals that will help in the resistance to the HLB. But there's certainly no complete cure or silver bullet out there that we can use to protect these trees from the HLB.
And despite all these additional efforts cutting into your bottom line to help protect trees, yields are down. Explain exactly what does it do to the tree? What does it do to the crop?
Well, the HLB eventually will kill the tree. It's anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half, 2 years, and it'll make the tree non-productive and effectively kill it. It certainly is can be a slow death, or it can be a fast death, and with that, we certainly lose production and have to replace the trees with new baby trees, and certainly in a constant battle with it.
And what do you do with infected trees once they have been removed? I mean, can you even use that acreage again, or is that area considered tainted? So
no, no. We can, once that tree is dead, then we take it out and replace it with a new baby tree and start the process again. But unfortunately, citrus takes at least 4 years to become profitable or to come into production, and that it's a long-term solution situation.
Well, this is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. Ahead of next week's Citrus Expo in North Fort Myers, we're taking a look at the status of Florida's citrus industry with Ron Hamill and Wayne Simmons of the Gulf Citrus Growers Association. You can connect with our guests. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And I had mentioned before we started the show this New York Times article we've been reading, a very detailed description about the work that's being done at Southern Garden Citrus to develop a genetically modified strain of citrus that is resistant to HLB. Is that the great hope for the industry right now?
Well, I don't know if it's a great hope. We need short-term solutions. Certainly a GMO modified tree would be something that's down the road, minimum of 5 or 10, maybe even 20 years. And we need solutions and answers now to fight this and to keep citrus growers in business.
And Ron, can you just tell us a bit, I mean, whether it's about, finding genetically modified versions that will be resistant or just any other efforts that have been out there as far as research to understand greening and ways to fight it? What has been going on these past years?
Well, the industry has invested over $60 million to date and have some of the best researchers in the world looking at greening and how best to deal with it. Everything from looking at procedures to sterilize or neuter the psyllid so they can't reproduce. Entomologically, several insects have have been reduced that way. So we have that effort going on, and everything from the GMO long-term genetically changes to the trees themselves. So there's a wide range of things, but as Wayne had indicated, the industry is under siege, and we're doing everything we can, both particularly looking at some things that growers can do today. And so far, in our region, we're kind of blessed with the fact that we have large contiguous acres of citrus where we could cooperatively spray certain times of the year. We work with the University of Florida scientists, the entomologists, and other key researchers to determine the best times to do that. And we've been very fortunate to have a good cooperative effort going on in our region, although we still have isolated pockets of intensive psyllid growth that we are actually looking into what we can do to intensify these. But right now, really, there's two things we can do. One is to spray for these psyllids and reduce these populations because this insect is spreading the disease from tree to tree. The other is just like you work out or you try to eat a good diet and do some fitness. So we know trees can't get up and work out, but we can feed our trees better and look at, like Wayne had indicated, trace elements, looking at nutritional programs that we can do today that'll make those trees hardier and healthier and hopefully sustain them longer than if they were not as healthy as surrounding trees. So we're working on just about every aspect of this, trying to deal with it in the short run.
So a variety of long-term and short-term efforts being looked at now. Do you feel confident that the larger community really understands the gravity of this? I mean, of course, growers understand it, but what about lawmakers? What about academia? Do they really understand what this could mean for the industry if we don't find solutions?
I think so. We've been very fortunate. Governor Scott and the state legislatures helped to appropriate. This was the first year I think our industry has asked for such a $9 million effort to help, and those funds are going to short-term solutions. That was the focus of this. Our local delegation with Senator Beniquisto and the other Matt Caldwell, Representative Caldwell, Matt Hudson, everybody was 110% behind the effort that Commissioner Putnam put forth in his budget to garner these kinds of funds. So we are getting support from the state and hopefully also from the federal government to help us with the research. But the great amount of research to date, that $60 million, has been invested by growers to fight this greening disease.
And going back to that idea of – I'm sorry, did you have something you want
to
add?
Well, I was just going to say that the growers actually put in that $60 million. It's actually skin from the grower, Florida citrus growers, that have been supporting the research to get this HLB solution solved or attempted to be solved.
Okay, so the growers themselves have been adding to that's okay.
Yeah,
and going back to this idea of the possibly genetically modified citrus tree, the plant that they're having some luck with combining it with a spinach gene. But regardless of where it comes from, there's kind of been a growing anti-GMO movement. And, you know, Florida citrus has always been marketed as this, you know, naturally healthy drink or snack. Do you think it might be difficult to convince some consumers to enjoy a product that comes from a genetically modified tree?
Well, I think certainly the challenges are out there on any product. It's interesting that we feel the scientific community needs to do a lot more to help educate the public at large on several things that are going on related to that. We look at some of the bigger crops worldwide. If we're to feed people worldwide over time with less acres, we've got to figure out technology and we need to make sure it certainly receives the scrutiny it needs to be able to pass along as a food crop. And there's various checks and balances in place at every step of anything having to do with this. So, yes, it is going to be a challenge, but as Wayne had indicated, this is still years and years away.
Sure.
And believe me, before anything that would impact the Jews would go through the various federal and worldwide protocols to make sure that that's a healthy, safe product to hit the market. So that's still years and years away. Certainly, we feel comfortable that as these technologies move forward, that there's going to be a lot more communication about that across the world.
Sure. You know, and with Florida, I think it's a particular concern. Our industry here is the second largest citrus producer on the planet. So while certainly if the industry here were to take a considerable hit, you know, we could make up that difference on store shelves with imports from other countries. But, I mean, I can't imagine there would be no impact. Consumers would feel that. I mean, is that something that's been looked at, how that might impact prices for consumers on shelves in future years?
Are you talking about the total loss of citrus mm-hmm. In general? I think that's even, John, as impactful as HLB is, the fact of the matter is there's still plenty of orange juice out there. We're looking at the long term here.
Sure.
You know, the citrus industry has weathered the storm in Florida for many, many years. We've had
literally
numbers of number of diseases have come through here. In fact, we kind of took our eye off of this greening because we were facing canker, and that was supposed to take the industry out. And then greening came along, which is actually more impactful than canker. So we're convinced that the industry is going to be here. It's probably going to look different. I think the biggest scare that we have, it's unfortunate that probably the smaller growers are going to be more challenged than the larger ones due to the fact that, you know, their inputs and their impact on the bottom line is more severe than the larger ones because of, you know, just the fact that the economics are hitting them harder than the larger guys because of just how economics works.
Right, right. Like quantitatively, a loss in the same amount of acreage would hit them much harder if they don't have as much to fall back on. That right, right. Well, what about Brazil? They're the world's – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just going to say that, you know, Florida certainly has had its challenges. But citrus has been grown in Florida for hundreds of years and will survive. You know, all industries have to change with the times. And Florida citrus growers are pretty resilient.
All right. All right. And again, like I said, the industry here is number two in the world. Brazil is number one. Have we looked at what they're doing to deal with the problem of greening?
Well, they certainly have greening. Actually, they had greening a few years before Florida had it. And greening is a worldwide disease that's impacting first found in China, but it's all over the citrus-growing world. Brazil is certainly competition to Florida. Certainly, Brazil has some advantages that Florida doesn't. And, you know, from a level playing field, it's good competition if everything's level and they have the same problems that we do disease-wise, but then they have some costs that we don't have to associate with that actually are more expensive for us from a labor standpoint and some of the regulatory costs as well.
You know, one thing, John, about Brazil, you know, Brazil as a country is about the size of the U.S. is larger than the U.S. So they have a large geographical area there that they can actually move groves from one area to another. So they can help dodge this this psyllid bullet sometimes by moving their operation from where the infections were versus even though it takes time versus Florida. We're kind of,
right.
You know, not necessarily stuck in the situation. But as you know, farmland in Florida is decreasing. So we have less acres to work with. And so we're kind of fixed in those locations for the most part to deal with this. So they have that added advantage of being able to move some of these growing operations around more than we can. And actually, production in Brazil is going down a little bit compared to what it was, but it's still huge. It's still the number one producer of orange juice in the world. And as Wayne said, you know, there's more collaboration going on between growers in Brazil and the Florida industry today. We're trying to find ways of working on research and other marketing opportunities, perhaps that that we didn't have in the past. So, you know, Brazil is a competitor and a tough one, as Wayne mentioned, but we're actually starting to work closer with other citrus producing countries to find solutions to these diseases because, as Wayne has mentioned, these are global impacting diseases and we've got to find answers.
Well, speaking of collaborations and some silver linings there, I know the Coca-Cola Company, which owns the Minute Maid brand, recently announced plans to support planting 5 million new trees on 25,000 acres, some of that here in southwest Florida. Really good news, but they must feel confident that HLB will be vanquished or at least significantly controlled. That's a significant financial investment.
And that certainly is positive news for the industry and to have a supporter like Coca-Cola and the Minute Maid Company. And it certainly it does have challenges, but like I said, Florida citrus growers are resilient and we will survive. But it's going to take a lot of hard work, and we appreciate the confidence that Minute Maid Company has in supporting this, as well as the Coca-Cola Company too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Ron, I know every year I wanted to turn to the Citrus Expo coming up next week. There's, academic and researchers in agriculture. They deliver lectures generally on a theme. Do you know what the theme is for this year?
I think it's RX for citrus, which means a drug tied into the prescriptions for citrus. And you know, what do we need to do here? And kind of updates on all the things that are going on relative to sustaining our industry in this region and all over the state. You know, growers, the expo's kind of grown. You know, we've had it for a number of years in this region. We've hosted it. But it's actually grown to a worldwide event. We get folks coming from other citrus-producing countries. So it's a real positive thing for our industry to come and come together and network and discuss the latest in technology and the latest in some of the things we talked about today as far as solutions. And we're looking forward to hosting another great event again this year.
And Ron, again, you're the point person for the Gulf Citrus Industry Banquet, which is Wednesday evening at the Harborside Event Center in downtown Fort Myers. The guest speaker this year is Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, and I would assume he would be talking about immigration reform at some point.
Well, the congressman is we're welcome him under reapportionment and redistricting. Congressman Diaz-Balart has more and more of our ag rural areas. And he's been dedicated to agriculture for a number of years, and we're fortunate to have a person like him to come and speak to the growers. And certainly he's going to be talking about immigration reform and how important that is to be able to have our workers to plant and harvest and tend our crops, not just citrus but vegetables and the other industries that are so important to the state and to our region. So I know he will certainly be touching on that, and he and Senator Rubio have been key players for Florida and for the whole United States on trying to come up with workable solutions and address these issues related to the immigration reform.
And Wayne Simmons, as a grower yourself, I'm wondering if there's any particular reforms that you would like to see.
Well, we recognize Senator Diaz-Balart's efforts in this immigration reform, and we want a labor force that we can depend on to harvest our crops and certainly to get our work done, and one that's not certainly this immigration issue in the last couple of years have impacted some of these commodities, the perishable commodities like vegetables and citrus, maybe not quite as perishable as vegetables, but certainly we have a time frame and we have to get it harvested, and we need a dependable workforce available in order to get that done, and certainly we recognize that changes need to be made to it. We're having to use offshore H-2A program to get our labor now, and it's very cumbersome and burdensome, and there needs to be some changes made to it.
So, and under the H-2A program, just to sort of paraphrase, that's where growers really take responsibility for workers, you know, transporting them to and from the county and the country, rather, providing housing and in some cases savings accounts. But you don't really see enlarging that as necessarily a viable option.
Well, that's really the only situation we have right now. And certainly with the immigration reform, we're looking at ways that we can streamline that process and make the workforce a little bit more reliable domestically.
Sure. And then Congress earlier this year did fail to pass the Farm Bill. What have been the repercussions there, or what do you think could be?
Well, it seems like it's certainly a massive program that really from the food stamp situation to actual, you know, basically takes up about 80% of it, and actual money coming back to growers to work with is less. So it certainly needs to be some changes made to it.
All right. And Ron Hamill, what's for dessert at the Citrus Banquet? Key lime pie? This year? Okay.
Well, actually, we have a couple of surprises at dessert, but it'll certainly reflect our citrus industry here in the region, and it's always a fun event, and we certainly appreciate all the support that we get from the folks that attend, as well as our guest speakers. And we're also blessed to have Commissioner Adam Putnam going to be with us, along with Congressman Diaz-Balart. And we certainly will be serving a lot of citrus products, both all during the expo and also at our banquet.
All right. And my final question for you, gentlemen, I mean, of course, our summers here are known for being rainy and wet, but this year seems to have been particularly wet. Does that have much of an impact on the groves, or has it been having it this year?
It actually has been very beneficial to the citrus groves this summer. Years past, it's kind of been a drier summer than before, and it's kind of a pleasant change to have a little bit wetter summer than what we've had.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for this portion of the program, but I want to thank my guests, President of LaBelle Fruit Company and of the Gulf Citrus Growers Association, Wayne Simmons. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to Ron Hamill, Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Gulf Citrus Growers Association. Ron, again, thanks for being with us.
It's always a pleasure.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, two Southwest Florida educators were among the top five finalists for this year's Florida Teacher of the Year. We'll meet Cypress Lake High School Center for the Arts teacher Patricia Gare and Riverview High School Marine Science teacher Katrin Rudge. Insights on what makes an effective educator. That's just ahead. Stay with us.